What is up? Welcome to another edition of the NFL Fantasy Live Podcast. It's me, your man, MG Marcus Grant. And I'm sitting here in the studio all by myself. Grant Barfield is on vacation this week. Michael Fabiano a little bit under the weather. So wishing him the best, a speedy recovery, and he'll hopefully be back with us real soon. I may be alone, but I'm not necessarily lonely. We'll have a guest coming up who will take me most of the way through this show. Get ready for that. We got plenty to talk about. We'll do a hype trainer smoke screen. We'll do a little bit of just fun rankings. Nothing really serious, because why be serious all the time? But before we get too far into it, I want to quickly go behind the glass and talk to our faithful producer, Senior Edward L. Murphy, Esquire. Murph, what's going on, man?
This is a strange one. We have a three-man team here, and two of them are down, so just me, you today, and a special guest coming up. But I'm finally in the fantasy football mode of me being the commissioner of my league, setting up the draft times and figuring out, like, you know, who, any rule changes, this and that. So I'm excited. You know, we had the Hall of Fame game, so it is actually back. Football is here.
It is a thankless job being a fantasy league commissioner.
Oh, it's the best. The best part is it's a 12 team league, 11 East Coasters.
So you're the only one out here.
I'm waking up at like 5 a.m. on a Saturday to do the draft. Yeah, it's great.
Oh man, that sounds not good at all. Speaking of folks on the East Coast, go to the phones. Our good friend of the program, just friend in real life as well. You can read him at The Athletic. He has a pair of podcasts, Sports Unsealed and the All In Sports Podcast. It's Jake Seeley. You can find him on Twitter, All In Kid. Jake, what's going on, man?
Not too much. I'm glad that I'm kind of the special guest on a solo day, because I like you better than the other two anyway.
I appreciate that. You know, we will keep that between us. You know, we won't promote that as the, you know, the headline for this podcast or anything like that. So in the meantime, Eddie, let's do some news, huh?
Let's do the news.
Jake, we will start down in Houston. The Texans, they let go of Deontay Foreman after a couple of seasons. Obviously, he was dealing with an Achilles tear, was trying to bounce back from that. I know, Jake, that a lot of folks are looking at this and sort of thinking that the Texans aren't going to stand pat with just Lamar Miller. But as we talk right now, he is the lead back. It seems like he will never die back there. So are we feeling confident about him?
I think the confident is always a vague answer with him. It's like, it's confident we know what we're going to get with Lamar Miller, but it's the Lamar Miller of it. You don't ever have somebody out of your draft excited and going, yeah, I got Lamar Miller. It's always the, oh, well, I guess I'll take him, because that's the last of the group. But let's be honest about him. I mean, last of the group, he's a fringe RB2. If there's the war of attrition of some injuries at running back, he'll finish as a mid RB2 as he did 2 years ago if he plays 16 games. And if not, he'll be in that range. But that's the thing, is you're taking him as an RB3. You know he's going to get those touches. I'm with you in the fact that I think they do something. I actually don't think they need to look outside the team. If it's Higdon and Crockett behind him, that would be even better for us as fantasy owners, for those that do have Lamar Miller. But we know what Lamar Miller is. He's a fine third running back. He's a fine second running back if you went wide receiver heavy. There's nobody ever excited about him, but it's fine. I guess confident is in the fact that he's kind of safe, and I think that's what makes him boring.
Do you believe any of this talk that they may make a run at Melvin Gordon? Their front office is in disarray. They don't have an actual general manager right now. I just can't imagine they're going to do something like that right now.
No, I'm with you. It's mostly because, let's be realistic, you know this. How many times do we really see trades in the NFL in general, let alone once we've already hit free agency and the draft? I mean, they do have the cap space for it, but I'm with you. On most normal teams, it doesn't make a whole lot of sense. And then we've got the report from McClain saying that it's not even on their minds. And then to add into fact of, let's not even talk about, you just mentioned it, the front office is all over the place. Like, who's making the decisions? Who's going to make that call? So I do think it's going to leave Lamar Miller. If you want to take him in that spot and feel confident, I don't think anybody's going to come in there and usurp Lamar Miller. The only thing that you have to worry about is if he has a down year and gets passed in midseason. But again, the draft cost isn't expensive enough that that's really a big deal anyway.
More running back issues, not issues, but news. The Broncos pick up Theo Riddick after he was let go by the Lions. And I saw a tweet this morning about him catching a 30, or at least a catch and run of a touchdown for 30 yards, right? That he was playing with the ones. look, man, I feel like we just got settled on this whole Philip Lindsay, Royce Freeman situation. Now we got to deal with Theo Riddick. This seems like total bad news to me.
It does. And on the one side of things, it kind of clusters that backfield for a little bit. But you said running with the ones, and I know you know this, but for everybody out there that's listening too, is like, don't always overreact to quote unquote running with the ones. Is, you know, you see this time and again every offseason, and a lot of people are like, oh, that means he's the starter. And it doesn't. It's how is a team going to evaluate a running back or any player if they're not running with the first team offense? If there's an open competition, that's how they're going to evaluate the player. They're not going to evaluate the player with the second and third team unit. So that's the one side of it. The second side of it is, as you mentioned, we already had concerns about Philip Lindsay, given his BMI and all the wear and tear of somebody of his size. He got injured in his first season despite being amazing. Royce Freeman was a touted, highly coveted, remember in fantasy leagues especially, rookie running back last year who I don't think the book is done and written on. So I think he's going to be back in the mix. And now you add in Theo Riddick and you say, all right, well, maybe Philip Lindsay still has last year's receiving numbers, but those are now over 16 games, and he doesn't see an improvement. And I think that's the concern, is now Philip Lindsay loses a little bit of that passing game work. He already had the concern of rushing touchdowns and the work from Royce Freeman. And I think it just turns this backfield into a headache. Could Philip Lindsay still be top 15? Obviously, the ability is there, but I think it just makes a real headache for us. But on the flip side, I think it's opened things up for somebody like Ty Johnson, as in a very, very, very late PPR sleeper over with the Lions, because, you know, Patricia loves his roles. That's what they brought C.J. Anderson in for, and Ty Johnson can now fit that role as somebody who, at this point in his career, probably has more explosiveness than Theo Riddick.
Yeah, and Theo Riddick was one of those guys that during his time in Detroit, I think we were all sort of waiting for him to pop, and it never quite did. I also feel like, you know, he was sort of hurt by the fact that they also had Amir Abdullah, and the two of them were sort of the same person. I felt like that, you know, the Lions didn't do either one of those guys any favors by having them essentially cannibalize each other's production while they were there in Detroit. Have you seen Antonio Brown's feet? Have you seen this picture of Antonio Brown's feet?
I have not, and I specifically have not on purpose. I'm one of those people that actually goes and watch, like, don't watch this injury.
Don't do that.
No, I do. I go watch, but there's one thing, is I hate feet. Like, even if you stepped out of the shower, clean feet, don't touch me with your feet. So this is the first time in history, Marcus, I have never, and I will not, unless somebody accidentally tweets it into my timeline and I happen to catch it, I specifically still have yet to see his foot.
They look like Mesopotamian relics. I mean, they are like, they're like dry and cracked and like blistered and calloused. And like, so the Raiders are considering him day to day. I know we're not really worried long-term about his prospects. He's going to be there. He's still going to be productive as long as he's healthy and on the field. But I'm sort of using this as a roundabout way to let you rant about Josh Jacobs, because I know how much you love him. And, you know, I feel like anything that potentially slows Antonio Brown maybe is long-term good for Josh Jacobs. Am I wrong?
No, you're definitely not wrong. But real quick, I will say for the people out there on Antonio Brown, there is a spit of concern for me, only because I talked to a player and they said it's similar to plantar fasciitis, where the only thing that's going to help is rest. And it is Antonio Brown, but you still want to see him get some, like, if he's ready for week one, I'm not concerned. You're not concerned. Nobody's concerned. But you still want to see him get some reps in with the team before the season starts. But yes, the Josh Jacobs, and you know, it's because we talked about it when I had you on my podcast, is I'm pounding the table for the misnomer that the fact that John Gruden doesn't like bell cows, because I go back to Cadillac Williams, as you know, as a rookie in 14 games, 290, not touches, Marcus, 290 carries. He gets hurt, comes back, 225 carries. He gave Ernest Graham 222 carries. He gave Tyron Wheatley over 200 carries 2 years in a row. John Gruden will turn to his number one guy often and plenty when he has a guy, and he has a guy. They spent a first-round pick on Josh Jacobs. Josh Jacobs is a good pass catcher. You've already heard reports about it that maybe Jalen Richard takes a step back. So, yes, you know me. I love Josh Jacobs. I have him as my RB12 in half-point PPR and 13 in full-point PPR. I think he's going to have an amazing rookie season. I think he could finish even higher than that.
I haven't, you know, it's funny because I don't think I've drafted him anywhere, mostly because I think he's never been on the board at a spot that I feel comfortable. Either it's too early or he's gone. So I don't think I've had a shot at him just yet. I don't know. It's going to be interesting. Especially, by the way, I guess this is a cheap way to promote this. But Hard Knocks starts on Tuesday, which I think this year with the Raiders and Gruden and all the personalities, this might be one of the best Hard Knocks seasons ever.
Oh, definitely. This is must-see TV. Well, although, how much are we going to see from Antonio Brown? Are we just going to keep getting shots of him, like, icing his feet?
Just, yeah, with his feet in an ice bucket the whole time? Yeah, who knows? Yeah. Who knows? Last little headline real quick. Colt McCoy, the Washington put out their depth chart, their preliminary preseason depth chart, and you know, as you mentioned, saying that a guy is running with the ones or is on top of the depth chart doesn't necessarily mean that's what it's going to be when the season starts. But the quarterback depth chart in Washington has Colt McCoy number one, Case Keenum number two, Dwayne Haskins right now at number three. Obviously, understanding that things can change between now and the start of the season, how much do you read into that? Does that change anything you think about that offense?
No, because it's my opinion on Dwayne Haskins. I still believe for the purpose of the team, for the future, for like, I don't think they're competing this season. I understand their offensive line already has issues with the whole Trent Williams situation and whether or not they want to throw a rookie out there. The best quarterback, in my opinion, is Dwayne Haskins. And the bar to pass with Case Keenum and Colt McCoy is not high enough that why not just get Dwayne Haskins out there? And I know he doesn't have a ton of starts under his belt, but you look at college and you look at that offense, let's just, you have it in front of you to look at the Ohio State offense and see the turn it made when Dwayne Haskins steps in at quarterback. And the one thing I love about him is he is one of the best quarterbacks I've seen in a couple of years that hits wide receivers in stride where they don't have to slow down. And I thought that's what he would have been a perfect fit for the Giants. But just get the ball rolling on your future. He is your quarterback of the future. It's not Colt McCoy. It's not Case Keenum. We know that. Now, if he completely bombs in preseason, that's a whole other question, and he's not ready and needs to sit and learn. But as of today, to answer your question for that specifically, I am not going to change my opinion until we get to week three of the preseason and see that Dwayne Haskins is just not even in the competition. As of today, I still say Haskins is starting 15, 16 games this year.
I guess I should have originally asked you your opinion of that offense, because I am not touching anybody on that team, so maybe that's where I should have started when I talked about this.
I will say this. I was very high on Darius Geis a few weeks ago because I kept comparing him to Dalvin Cook's timeline and saying that if you go timeline to timeline, he should be 100% by week one, where we saw Dalvin Cook by midseason last year at 100% and what Dalvin Cook could be. And now everybody's drafting Dalvin Cook as a top 6-7 running back. Darius Geis on that path, who I think is also a better pass catcher than people realize because the LSU offense doesn't pass to their running backs, as we all know. But the setback with the soft tissue injury is something to monitor. Adrian Peterson's still there. Chris Thompson's a great pass catcher and coming back. But if Chris Thompson's slow to come back and Darius Geis looks 100%, I could still get on that. I will say this, though, Marcus, is that you look at, you see the reports from Trey Quinn, you know, Mr. Irrelevant, all that type of stuff. If you're in a deep league, if I'm not talking about your standard 12-team, 16 roster spots, all that type of stuff, but if you're talking about the fact of, like, you know, flyer, like Josh Doctson, this is his last chance. And I think he knows that. This is his last chance. And this is somebody who is valued as, like, one of the best prospects in some years. Why not just throw the dice roll on him? Because if not, you cut him by week one, and then who cares?
Yeah, I mean, I guess that's a good way to look at it. I've just had such a fear of touching anyone in that offense that I've stayed away. And I'm like, I'll let somebody else deal with it. If I'm gonna throw darts, I've been throwing them elsewhere. I just have not been throwing them anywhere.
No, you're not getting sucked into the Jordan Reed looks amazing.
No, man. Look, last year, here's the thing. It's funny because so all these years he played well and he could never stay healthy. Last year he stayed relatively healthy for Jordan Reed. And he produced nothing. So I can't do it with him. So there you go. That's pretty much everything you need to know.
That was the news.
All right. We've got Jake Seeley from The Athletic and a pair of podcasts on with us. You can find him at All In Kid on Twitter. Jake, I was going through some of these headlines and wanted to get your thoughts whether or not these are hype trains or smoke screens. You know, because this is the time of year where it's hard to trust everything you hear. You know, you see anybody who follows beat writers on Twitter, you get the so-and-so has looked great in practice today, or so-and-so has not looked great and is struggling. And, you know, it's hard to kind of figure out what all this stuff means. So I'm going to pick your brain and kind of get your thoughts on some of these things. The first one, not necessarily a hype train or smokescreen, but more of is this something to be concerned about or not? And you and I talked about this a little bit on your podcast recently. Andrew Luck. and this lower body injury, whether you want to call it an ankle, a calf, whatever they're calling this thing, he's expected to sit out a handful of practices this week. This has sort of been lingering, and I know a lot of people are starting to get that deja vu all over again feeling again. Like, is this, should we really be concerned, or are the Colts just being cautious here?
Yeah, so it, basically, if this was any other quarterback, we'd be like, okay, you know, they're just playing it safe. But we, like you just said, it's deja vu all over again. It's that bad taste in our mouth where, hey, yeah, he'll be fine by week one. He'll be fine by week four. He'll be fine by week. Oh, Andrew Luck's not playing this year. Like, I remember that. It was just not too long ago. So I think that's the only reason we're so worried about it. As of today, I'm going to say my worry level is probably like a 1 or 2 out of 10, just because, and the only reason it's even a 2 is because it's Andrew Luck and we've done this again. But I'm not going to get concerned enough where I move him or the players down my draft board until we're talking week 2 and he's still not practicing or playing. I think that right now, if we want the player, Andrew Luck, to be 100%, safe is better than sorry.
I have to admit that I sort of asked this question out of selfishness because I have really gotten behind the Andrew Luck is QB1 thing, and I've gotten on board with Marlon Mack sort of believing that Andrew Luck helps propel him to something bigger and better. I think I've drafted Eric Ebron in a few places, so I'm really asking this question selfishly so that I can feel better about some of my own decisions.
Did it make you feel any better?
Yeah, actually it did, so I appreciate that. Carlos Hyde is reportedly taking advantage of his opportunities with Damian Williams out. Now, I know that from the moment, you know, he was signed there in Kansas City, nobody really believed that he was going to be an impact player. In fact, I feel like a couple weeks ago I was even seeing that, you know, he could end up being a camp casualty, could end up being cut. Now, all of a sudden, he's supposedly taking advantage of all these opportunities. Are we buying this, or is this just training camp fodder?
We're slightly buying it, but the only reason we're buying it is because Damian Williams still isn't getting on the field, and now we've got the report that Andy Reid's starting to get frustrated that he's not on the field. And, you know, that's open for interpretation. If he's just frustrated because he wants his player out there, or frustrated because he's saying, you know, he should be out there, and why isn't he healing faster? So you can look at it different ways. We don't have the real answer, but that's why it's a little bit concerning. I'm with you. And also with the reports, I'm actually, when that report came out, I tweeted and said, reminder, Carlos Hyde is not a threat to Damian Williams. Well, he is if Damian Williams isn't on the field. And I know we all have the numbers of Damian Williams has never had more than 50 carries, but Damian Williams also came from a team that was not the best offense in the league, and that surprised everybody, and one that misused a lot of their players, and just look at the fact they used a Kenyon Drake last year. So if Damian Williams is the starter, we know Andy Reid and how he uses his starting running backs, and if he's the starter for 16 games, his ceiling is top 5, and he's not even one of the top 10 talent running backs. It just happens to be where he is. But that's why we need to pay attention to what's happening, because Carlos Hyde, despite his 3.3 yards per carry last year, and despite the fact he was on some miserable situations in his own right, if he's the starter, anybody who's the starter on this team as the lead running back getting the majority of the touches is in the conversation as an RB1 because of this offense. So that's why you need to pay attention to this, because if we get down halfway through the preseason, week 3, and Damian Williams isn't getting there, and now he's been supplanted, that's the one side of it. And the other flip side of this, too, is we have to look at this team and remember that they kind of said it without saying it, is the fact that Damian Williams is still the guy unless this happens, because they said the games and preseason games are going to determine the backup depth chart between Hyde, and then they even listed Darrell Williams and Darwin Thompson. So they kind of said it without saying it. It's still Williams' job, but it's only still Williams' job for as long as he can get on the field.
You know, you mentioned the fact that he is, the opportunity is there, and that's what people love, but that in terms of talent, he's not a top 10 guy. How much do we take into account that last year he really got on the field late in the season, and he had fresh legs at a time when everybody he was going against was probably, you know, worn down, beat up, what have you. And look, it's not to take, you know, away from what he did, but just to sort of put in context a little bit what he did, that he was probably the freshest guy on the field for those last few games of the season.
Yeah, and there's ways, you know, there's ways you can spin it in any different direction of, like, he was the freshest. Is he also finally being used in a way that best suited his skill set? And the fact that if you watch the way he runs, kind of fits this offense pretty well in the way that Reed likes the backfield. So you can spin it a couple different ways. It's certainly a 1-2. Let me put it this way, Marcus, and you know this. If you look at Damian Williams, you can poke holes in him probably 5 different ways. If you want to support him, you can give him 5 different positive things. I'm somebody that's behind him and supporting him. and there's a lot of people on either side. Basically, what's going to come down to, injury or not, even if he was 100% of today, either you're in on Damian Williams or not. I don't think there's a lot of people playing the middle ground.
Yeah, and I think that's going to be, yeah, look, he's still going to go high, and I think there's still the potential there. You know, just, we always have, I feel like we have to look at every side of the situation when we talk about a guy. So last week I wrote a series on NFL.com about guys who are essentially undervalued in draft. This week I feel like I have to do the companion piece with guys who are overvalued in draft. This one sort of hurts me, Jake, because, you know, Kenny Golladay came out recently and said, I can be a 100 catch guy. And my response is, I agree, just not in this Lions offense. I mean, I don't know. I mean, I know he says it, and I think he has the talent, but I feel like this is kind of a smokescreen, Jake, that it just can't happen with this offense constructed as it is.
I am 100% with you on that. This is 100% a smokescreen because, I mean, just looking at last year, just to take last year's sample, but the fewest amount of targets to get 100 receptions last year was Michael Thomas with 147. Everybody else had more than that at 149. And actually, everybody past him and Stephon Diggs had 150 or more. So that's really where the question comes in. And also, look at Michael Thomas and look at his reception rate. So let's talk about that for a second. So you're right. It's the offense. It's Matthew Stafford and this offense. It's, yes, you vacated the Tate targets, but Tate wasn't on the field the entire time, even if you want to include the fact that Marvin Jones is coming back for after missing 7 games, so you've got to take about 40 or 50 targets and pull them back over to Marvin Jones. All right, so let's say Theo Riddick's not there anymore. Well, some of those are going to go to Kerryon Johnson, some of those to Ty Johnson. I just don't see any which way before we've even gotten to the point of the offense as a whole, which I think what you're getting at here, it's the Patricia offense, which runs the ball a hell of a lot, and the fact that I don't feasibly see how he gets 130, 35, let alone 150 targets. So, yes, I love you, Kenny Golladay. I love the upside that you have as a player. I actually love your fitness offense. But there's no way on earth I see you getting to 100 targets or 100 receptions, because I just don't see you getting the targets to get the receptions.
I mean, just the last year, just based on their pacing last year, I mean, they were one of the slowest paced teams in the league last season. You know, and it just, Matt Patricia seems to be one of those old school guys who wants to play defense, run the football. I just, you know, I want it to be so, but I can't make it be so. I just can't. All right, last one for you in this hype train or smoke screen, and this one is, because it's like fantasy catnip, right? And like, I'm not one who jumps on this, but I know that the moment this name pops up, everybody starts to scramble and salivate. I mean, it's very Pavlovian almost. Reports, Josh Gordon is going to file for reinstatement. I mean, I can't do it. I feel like we've had our hearts broken too many times. I mean, are you anteing up again for this? If this happens, are you going to ante back up for Josh Gordon?
Yeah, so I was never really in on Josh Gordon anyway after the first suspension, so I'm not really anteing up anyway because I never really anteed up in the first place, because it's just the frustration of not knowing if he's ever going to be out there. And everybody's always willing to pay. As you said, people salivate. People see the upside. People remember the huge season he had, and he's like, well, he's with the Patriots. So, yeah, he's worth taking in the 6th, 7th round. And as of today, he's probably not going to go there. But if he's reinstated, he'll get back up to that level. And that's why, is because right now, he's not even officially reinstated. Even before that, is he going to be the number two? I think James White's the number two receiver, quote-unquote, on this team, because it's Jacoby Myers, Josh Gordon, Philip Dorsett, N'Keal Harry, who hasn't looked good so far. There's just a litany of options that reminds me about the Super Bowl teams from the early years for the Patriots, where it was a bunch of guys behind Deion Branch. And that's what it's looking like. It's a bunch of guys behind Julian Edelman. Does Josh Gordon have the highest upside of anybody, not Julian Edelman? Absolutely, Marcus. You know that. I know that. Everybody knows that. But am I going to invest in him in my league? I can't pull that trigger because somebody's going to take him rounds, not picks, before I
do. I mean, just, it. You know, it's funny. Every time his name comes up, it's just people get irrational about it. And I think, you know, everybody looks back at that one huge magical season he had. But man, that was, at this point, that was so long ago that it's just hard to think that something like that's ever going to come back again. I mean, 2013, it's a long way in a rearview mirror, man. And I just, you know, I don't know. It's just funny. Every time his name pops up, people just start to, you know, panic a little bit and start sweating. And it's funny. So, all right. So before I let you go, and I appreciate the time, Jake, part of your stock in trade is rankings. You are consistently one of the most accurate rankers in the fantasy industry. And so now I want to get your rankings on some different non-fantasy football related things, but things that I know are sort of near and dear to your heart. So I got three different categories. I'll give you three different things within that category, and I want your rankings on those. So ready? Okay. All right, here we go.
Yep.
Animated shows. Ones that, you know, I know you love because you and I have discussed some of these before. So I want your rankings between Voltron, Final Space, and One Punch Man. How do you rank those?
I almost feel obligated to put one of them first. But
that's why I did that, because I know that, you know, you sort of have a personal connection with the creators of one of those shows. So I'm going to try to put you on the spot here.
I appreciate that. But I would put, look, I'm going to say it. I'll put Final Space first for multiple reasons. I actually think that some of the best character development in a comedy slash sci-fi cartoon show, which is just, it took me really by surprise last year. And that's why Olin Rogers, the creator, he's kind of taken off. And he's taken off because of this show and a lot of the other stuff. He has YouTube shows and stuff like that. But I mean, the investment you get into these characters, you actually really kind of feel for them. I enjoy that show more than I expected, and I'm glad. I put it this way, this is how I know it's first. If Voltron, I could catch up over a weekend and be like, if I want to go out, that's fine. And now it's over, as you know. One Punch Man is the same thing. It's like, all right, you know what, I'll watch three next week, and it's a great show in its own right. But Final Space, it's 11:30 Monday night. I'm watching Final Space. Sorry, that's what I'm doing. That's how I know it's number one. So I'll give One Punch Man the slight edge over Voltron just because it's still going. And I actually thought season two got way too much crap. I thought it was actually still really good. It just left on a crazy cliffhanger. But Voltron, if it was still going, would be number two. But since it's over, it's number three.
All right. Okay. That's fair. So then next one for me, Disney shows, right? DuckTales, Darkwing Duck, and Chippendale's Rescue Rangers.
So I find that you left this interesting one off. You forget Gummy Bears. Gummy Bears is underrated. Gummy Bears is a very underrated one that was kind of in that block. And I think if you think about it, Marcus, I think they were teaching us about PEDs. Because if you remember,
the gummy berry juice, right?
Yeah. And all of a sudden, to power them up, and these little dudes are beating up these giant oaks. Like some underlying theme they were trying to teach kids back then. But all right, of these three, you know what my number one answer is. It's the theme song opener and closer for my show myself. It's DuckTales is number one. No question about it.
Right.
I will go, because it's a spinoff from that, I will actually put Darkwing. The order you just put, Darkwing Duck number two, and Chippendales is number three. But Chippendales, not because it's not good. It's actually probably the second best theme song of all those Disney cartoons. But it's just it's a third, because their voices after a while can kind of grate on you.
Yeah, that's fair. That's fair. I mean, which I think is honestly why, Monterey Jack, I can't remember who's the other character, but like that's why they had regular voices, because you couldn't have four characters all with those, you know, squeaky chipmunk voices. I think that would have been probably too much. All right, last one. Cereal, because I know you have done cereal rankings, which is sort of weird, because yeah. I don't think you actually eat cereal, correct? Like you don't eat breakfast cereals, but you rank them, which I think is sort of strange.
No, I ate all of them, but just I have a borderline, I guess it's not photographic memory when it comes to that. I don't know what the word is for it, but I have a borderline memory where I remember things from 10, 20 years ago, so I remember how they all taste, but I did taste some new ones for it. I just don't eat it consistently.
Okay, well, I will give you some. See, these are old school ones that, according to the Google, are some of the top selling cereals in the country. Cinnamon Toast Crunch, Honey Nut Cheerios, and Fruit Loops.
those are the three we're going here for.
Yeah, I could tell you
hashtag check the link for those, because I think that's what you said. For everybody that's out there, so you don't know because you can't see the word, but remember, Fruit Loops isn't even spelled UIT.
No, it's O's. FROOT, yes.
Yes, because they're all the same flavor. They're not even different flavors. So Fruit Loops actually checked in at 33rd.
Wow. Right,
over 55. Honey Nut Cheerios was tied 13 and 14. Cinnamon Toast Crunch was originally third or fourth, but I found this out, Marcus. There was, thanks to a listener, told me there's Churros Cinnamon Toast Crunch, and it perfectly fixes the problem, the fact that Cinnamon Toast Crunch gets soggy too fast. So those are now the number one. It's the Churros Cinnamon Toast Crunch. You got to go try them.
That seems sort of redundant, because Cinnamon Toast Crunch is basically churros in like little crunchy square form, right? I mean, it just seems redundant to call it churro flavor.
That's actually a really big, I mean, like if they called them like chocolate cocoa puffs.
Right, exactly. Exactly. It's kind of redundant. I will say this. I don't know if you ranked it, and I don't know if you remember this. There was a cereal back in my childhood called Circus Fun. Oh, it was like they had a crazy little jingle in these commercials, and like, you know, they had all these marshmallows that were shaped like circus animals, elephants and giraffes and whatever. I remember begging my mom to buy a box of it, and how sometimes you taste something and it tastes like the smell of something else, since your smell and your sense of taste are connected. I just remember begging my mom for a box of this, pouring a bowl, and realizing that the marshmallows in it tasted like the smell of garbage. And I'm like, this is disgusting. But at that point, I was all in because I begged my mom for it. And she's like, you're going to eat this whole box. And so I suffered through it for like a couple of weeks.
No. I never had those, but do you remember the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles and the Nintendo cereal system?
I remember them. I never ate it, but I do remember those things, yes.
They were like knockoff, and I'm not even talking about like pretend. These were like the knockoffs of the knockoff copies of like Lucky Charms, where the sugar taste was the most – oh, yeah, I couldn't even finish a bowl. They were both so disgusting.
Oh, that's vile. That is wrong. I could go on for hours about cereal, but I will refrain, and I will save my audience from doing that. Jake, appreciate the time. For folks out there who are listening, and most folks who listen to this show probably know you, but for those who don't, where can they find you?
Yes, at AllInKid, as you said, on Twitter is the easiest way because I tweet everything out. But over at The Athletic, theathletic.com, where there's tons of stuff over there. Our DraftKid is out. Actually, second wave launched today. As I told you before, the rankings are freshly updated. So you can find me there, and you've mentioned the podcast. Yeah, All in Sports Podcast and Sports Unsealed, so a lot of places, including special guest spots like this, which was one of my favorites.
Hey, we appreciate it. Always love having you on, and we'll definitely be in touch at some point during the season. If, certainly on the internets, and, at some point maybe we connect in person, too. That'd be fantastic.
Yeah.
So appreciate it, Jake. And for you out there listening, we appreciate it as well. We are done. As always, the drill. Tell two friends to tell two friends. Rate, review, and remember, if plan A fails, you still have 25 letters left. We'll see you on Wednesday.